Blog Talk Radio.
Well, here we go, ladies and gentlemen, across the country. If it's Saturday, it's that time again. It's a Doc Talk hosted by Dr. Greg Roscoe, live from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Yours truly, Mark Mancini, producing in Los Angeles, the early version of this thing. 347-205-9631. You can catch the archive version on blogtalkradio.com/Mancini Sports, podcast platforms, wherever you subscribe to podcasts, powered now by Mancini Media. So without further ado, as I lay the red carpet down, put the podium in its place, hand off the mic. First of all, Doc, how are you? Second of all, how can people get a hold of you? And third, we got a great subject to talk about today.
Mark, thank you. You know, as far as doing well, again, we're kind of staying on the ride the wave here. We're doing well. We know our listenership is increasing. Mark, I am getting emails, by the way, for questions from our listeners. So that excites me. People can get a hold of me, gjrmd308@outlook.com. And, you know, as always, we'll get back to you. You may give me a day or so, but we sure will get back with you and make sure we answer your question or your concern or recommendation for our show. So, Mark, things are going well there. The topic today, Mark, is a very important, urgent topic. You know, it really is airway management. We have cases where there are diseases that affect the breathing, and that can be acutely that our patients are suffering respiratory insult, and really they're in the process of almost dying or suffocating. And along with that airway management, one topic that we see very acutely, and what brought it to mind was we had a recent case of something called epiglottitis. Now, epiglottitis is a swelling of the top of the voice box. And when that occurs, there's not a lot of time to get our patient's care to the emergency room and possible, we call it airway management, either with a breathing tube or with a tracheostomy. And that's what I wanted to discuss a little bit today about airway management in some of these severe cases. So that's kind of what's going to kick this off today, Mark.
Okay, I'll give you the platform to start on it, and I'll take the you know, listeners' comments and pass them on to you. But, boy, this sounds like a really great topic, and I can't wait to hear the expertise and knowledge of it.
Well, thank you so very much. And, you know, Mark, as always, we want to start with basics, and I think that kind of sets the groundwork for our listeners to maybe understand or hear new words they haven't or hear words they have heard and maybe aren't sure what they mean. And, you know, as far as when we talk about the voice box sits at the top of the breathing tube. And a major structure there beside the vocal cords is an anatomical structure called the epiglottis. The epiglottis is like a little trap door. It's a structure that probably is about a half inch wide, about an inch and a half long. And when we go to swallow, Mark, this little trapdoor falls over the vocal cords, so we don't have a situation like aspiration, where meaning that food, liquids, saliva go into the breathing tube, and then, of course, cause coughing and choking. So this epiglottis is a very important structure. Having said that, in the state of health, it helps us with swallowing. And, of course, you know, we talked about the three phases of swallowing, Mark, where we have the oral phase or the mouth, then we have the laryngeal phase, and then the third phase is the esophagus. So the food passes three areas. With that second phase of swallowing, where the epiglottis is involved, it does close off the voice box and indeed protect our airway from aspiration. When that epiglottis gets damaged, And there are a couple situations where it can. Now, it's not a frequent finding. It's not a frequent diagnosis. But when it is diagnosed, it is a medical emergency. Where we can get damage, if someone overall has a thermal injury or they're in a fire and they're breathing in toxic materials, or, Mark, vaping. Vaping those hot liquids can damage the epiglottis. And when it is damaged, it tends to swell. When it swells, it starts to obstruct the breathing tube. The other real urgency is infection. You know, case that I'm referring to that really stimulated this topic, Mark, is about a 55-year-old Caucasian male who was out cutting grass. And overall, he was a snuff chewer, but indeed, you know, kind of an old farmer, had several acres to cut. And he was out cutting one morning and was inhaling this debris from his field, which scratched the epiglottis, opened it up for bacteria. Bacteria then caused inflammation in the tissues of the epiglottis and swelling, and the man was having marked difficulty breathing. He wasn't able to speak, and, of course, his breathing was very, very labored. Fortunately, his wife had seen him on the tractor having difficulty, called the ambulance. The ambulance service, of course, went out, got him, brought him into the hospital. Now, interestingly, when they did have him on the litter bringing him in, most people, Mark, with their head back in a, like, 45-degree angle. But with this disease, epiglottitis, you can't lay back. He was sitting forward, kind of arched forward with his mouth open, almost gasping for breath. So when he did come into the ER, the personnel jumped right on top of it. They made the right diagnosis. And then, of course, they called me in from an ear, nose, and throat standpoint. Mark, and typically what happens is that we have our anesthesia team there to help manage the airway. And normally the first thing they try to do with this is to actually put a breathing tube in called an endotracheal tube. So that overall that was attempted. However, due to the marked swelling, they were unable to get this breathing tube in. And then the next level of care is either where we actually do a formal tracheostomy or something called a cricopharyngotomy, where we actually make a little hole into the breathing tube. And sometimes you'll hear people talk about taking an ink pen and placing that into the airway to provide care. However, if that was attempted unsuccessfully, then I proceeded to do something called a tracheostomy with this gentleman awake. And we did save his life, by the way. But indeed, that's kind of the circumstances that I'd like to, you know, bring to our listeners. Mark, do you have anything on your side?
Yes. Lance from McKeesport, Pennsylvania, chiming in, says, guys, I like the early version today. Great show last week of Warren Brewster. Can't wait to hear another one of those episodes. As far as this breathing tube, do you have to make a hole in the throat sometimes to get the air flowing if you can't get the breathing tube down there successfully? Wow, that's another great question.
It is. And Lance is pretty sharp here. You know,
yeah.
Normally we breathe through our nose and our mouth. The air goes in under the epiglottis, past the vocal cords into the lung. Well, when you have an airway obstruction to the top of the voice box, as with this epiglottitis, then we actually make an opening where we cut the skin, then actually make an opening into the trachea. Once we do that, we then put a breathing tube in called a tracheostomy tube. A lot of times with airway management problems, we can intubate from the top down, as they do when you're in the operating room for surgery. However, there are occasions when there is like an obstruction of the upper airway, you're not able to put a breathing tube in. So I think Lance understands the process of what's going on here and how we try to save this man's life.
Yep. Don from Sparks, Nevada, chiming in, says, another great show. Like listening to it, telling his friends. More or less, he says, with the back of the voice box and everything, what are the causes of an infection? Could it be dental stuff? Could it be just not taking care of your throat? We talked about, he said, and he's heard the shows where they talked about salt and gargling and everything. What causes all that infection besides, you know, other needs? Wow, that's knowledgeable listeners here.
Very knowledgeable. And, you know, when we talk about, you know, causes of an epiglottitis, when we talk about, you know, this problem, and just to kind of lay it out, what normally happens, there's some injury, some scratch, some opening into the tissue of the epiglottis. Having said that, Mark, if I can expound here a little bit on anatomy, the epiglottis is a little piece of cartilage covered by respiratory tissue or mucosa. That lining, for some reason, gets damaged. Now, it could be that someone was swallowing, you know, a hard piece of bread. They swallowed a little fish bone. That scratched the epiglottis. So it opened up that tissue. And then, of course, as we know, there is bacteria in the nose, in the mouth, in the throat. And it can be a variety of infectious agents, whether it's a bacterial agent, a viral agent like influenza, or even fungal. You know, a fungus can cause epiglottitis. So it's kind of, you know, cause and effect. We have the pathogens there, but overall, there needs to be an insult on the tissue, which opens it up. And again, we're talking about infectious agents, but we also talk about, as I mentioned, you know, thermal injury, either, you know, from a very hot beverage or, a vaping, those hot liquids can cause, definitely, epiglottitis. And, again, it's the swelling and inflammation of the tissue. So that overall, we have the known causes, but usually it's a cause and effect. There has to be a little bit of an insult to the epiglottis. Then secondarily, the infectious process comes in, and our body causes an awful lot of inflammation. With the inflammation and swelling, we get airway obstruction. So hopefully that gives us a little bit of an idea what the etiology and how these things work, Mark.
Gail from Clearwater, Florida, live listener, you know, we hear from her all the time, basically coming in on this one. And she is basically saying, you know, when you hear musicians and everything where they strain their voices, could that be the same cause of an infection of the voice box? Wow, that I didn't even think of that one.
Yeah, typically not, though, Mark. You know, when we talk about this disease entity called epiglottitis, which is a true emergency, usually the vocal cords are not affected. The vocal cords anatomically are below the epiglottis. If someone's having a vocal problem, and, you know, we've talked about hoarseness on a prior show, it usually is trauma to the vocal cords from vocal abuse that'll give singers a problem with chronic hoarseness. So it's usually not infectious in the voice box, but it is infectious in the epiglottis.
Robin from Youngstown, Ohio, another one that always comes in. Is there anything you can do to prevent something like this?
A lot of times there are not things to prevent this. Now, just having said that, we do have at one time epiglottitis was a very prominent disease in the 70s in children because of infectious agents. And, you know, since the 70s and vaccinations a lot of these episodes of epiglottitis have been prevented. One of the main causes many years ago was Haemophilus influenza. There is a vaccine children have received called the HIP vaccine. And once that's starting to be pretty much routine, we've seen epiglottitis really in children almost go away. Adults, of course, don't get that. And, you know, again, I think the best thing to do, let's not prevent trauma to our throat. And, you know, as far as having said that, let's chew. Let's make sure, you know, we're not chewing bones or cartilage that might be a little bit rough, giving us a direct trauma. The other thing, you know, is ingestion, caustic ingestion of chemicals, so that if you're working in a factory, some type of a carbon plant, or you're using a lot of different chemistries, wear a mask. You know, watch thermal injury as far as hot beverages, hot foods. Make sure they're a little bit cool before you put them in your mouth. Traumatize the epiglottis and don't damage it. The risk of epiglottitis is far, far less. You think that may help us?
Oh, that's a great point. Sal from Germantown, Pennsylvania, chiming in. Another one that comes through here all the time, whether we're early or late, doing the shows at the regular scheduled times, says basically when you look at COVID, and COVID now affects swallowing, do you see a lot of cases where the COVID cases have affected anybody swallowing? Because that's some of the symptoms too.
You're absolutely right. You know, when we talk about swallowing, you know, the word that we use to describe that, Mark, is dysphagia. And dysphagia is difficulty swallowing, painful swallowing. COVID has, from, you know, several months now, maybe years now, has caused some difficulty swallowing. Again, we think it affects the nerve fibers that go to our esophagus. In affecting them, the nerves aren't working properly, Mark. And you know, Mark, there's something called peristalsis, that when we go to swallow in the esophageal phase, you know, the food is pushed down. We get an expansion area, a contraction area. Expansion, contraction pushes the food into the stomach. Well, with COVID, we lose some of that functioning, that the food is not able to be contracted in. The bolus stays somewhat put, and then, again, you get difficulty moving the food through the esophagus. But COVID does that from what we think is it affects the nerve supply to that organ. You think that's helpful?
Well, definitely. And, you know, getting back to the COVID thing, I mean, you always hear the symptoms of that. And he brings up an interesting point, and you breaking it down, you know, because you always think of, okay, how does it affect everything? You think of the symptoms of it, the fever, the chills maybe sometimes,
sure,
fatigue. And we don't think of the swallowing aspect of it. Now, the only time I usually think of, you know, when I'm swallowing is, okay, if it's hard to swallow, maybe it's a dental infection or something.
Yes, sir.
That's the first thing I would think. And like you said, we always try to break these things down. You know, and we've talked about the salt and gargling salt and everything. So for somebody that's out there listening to this, the swallowing is a big thing, and we don't know what the infection. It could be a cause of anything.
You're right. You know, Mark, when we take a broad symptom like, say, swallowing or dysphagia, you know, as always, Mark, there are many causes for this symptom. So, you know, if our listeners are experiencing something like that, or their spouse is experiencing something like that, usually you need a little bit of professional help. And the causes, of course, can vary, Mark, from the COVID to a stroke, which can affect the musculature, with a hiatal hernia or gastric reflux that actually burns the esophagus, causes swelling, and gives us painful swelling as well. So there are many different, you know, we use the word etiologies of dysphagia. So there's a variety. But if someone is having difficulty swallowing, they're losing weight, their clothes don't fit well anymore, Mark, they need a little bit of professional investigation.
Brian from Peoria, Illinois, I believe, is chiming in here. Maybe it's Peoria, Arizona here. Let me see if I don't want to butcher that. Peoria, Arizona, basically.
Arizona,
says, guys,
okay.
First, yeah, he's coming in. He says, what about lozenges now? Sucrets was an old one. Throat lozenges, do they help to soothe the airwaves? Wow.
Yeah.
I'm getting an education here.
Well, we all are. We all learn something from talking about it, discussing it, hearing our listeners' questions. And, you know, Mark, just interestingly, I have a little bit of a philosophy that when I go to work every day, my patients teach me something every day. You know, there's always something to learn. You know, people are very observant, and they all have different experiences. So, you know, that's part of, you know, what we talk about. And, again, I'll get to the point. But, you know, when we talk about dealing with our patients, we talk about the four pillars. We talk about the history, the examination, the testing, and then, of course, decision-making. But in that history-taking phase, I always learn something. Now, when we talk about lozenges, sucrets, realize they're a sugar base. And, you know, it's a little bit of a gooey, thick, sticky liquid, which is probably a sucrose of some kind. Or a fructose. And, you know, overall, that will soothe, you know, an irritated throat. Now, as far as depending on the cause, you know, if the cause is a dental infection, you know, periodontitis or a tonsillitis or another step in that process is pharyngitis, you may get some soothing, but it will not resolve the problem. The problem will still persist, and you may need to continue to take, you know, the Sucret or whatever it may be. So we want to look at the cause of why do you need to do that. You know, the other thing that will give us a sore throat, of course, is reflux, gastric reflux. Patients, Mark, that reflux up the esophagus actually into the mouth. That will cause burning, irritation, and then again, where you want to use a medication to help soothe that. So I that may be very helpful, you know, in answering, but I think it was a very good question.
Alan from Cranston, Rhode Island, trying to follow up on that one, says, well, what causes the scratchiness in the throat? Sometimes you get that little tickle in the throat, the scratchiness. Is that an irritation too? Wow.
It is. The scratchy feeling is inflammation. And typically, you know, from a bacteria or a virus or a fungal infection or medication. You know, we have people that have airway problems or asthma problems. And overall, they're taking inhalers, Mark. Sometimes that medication can be very irritating to the throat lining. And then you get that scratchiness. But indeed, it's more of an inflammation. And the cause can vary from a bacterial-type problem or a medication-type problem. And the other thing, Mark, realize the throat is kind of a pass-through from a lot of the mucus from the nose sinus dripping into the throat. You know, there's a lot of people that will spit, but we have a lot of people that actually swallow the mucus. And at times, that mucus can have bacteria, as well as other toxic products, which will give them the scratchy throat. One thing one may want to do, again, in general, in a generic case, Mark, the old story, a little bit of a saltwater rinse. You know, do a little bit of warm gargling, dilute either the mucus, the bacteria, whatever, again, the cause could be, even the acid. By diluting it, you may not resolve the problem completely, but you improve the quality of your health.
Yeah, as we start to wind this down, Ray out of New York basically says he enjoyed last week's show, the Doc and Jock podcast.
That's pretty cute.
Yeah, that is a good one. Warren was great with you last week, and, boy, it's simply amazing. Okay, we're down to about 4 minutes and some change. Let's put a cap on this, and then we'll talk about what we're going to discuss next week at our regular scheduled time.
Be glad to. So next week, Mark, we're going to be at the 11 o'clock hour Eastern Standard, correct?
Yes.
Beautiful. And I thank the listeners this morning for getting up so early, especially on the West Coast, and listening to our podcast. Mark, you know, as far as airway management, you know, the airway is a very, very vital part of our health. If one is experiencing any shortness of breath, difficulty breathing air in, let's call 911. Let's get some help. Let's get to a medical facility and have it evaluated. And, you know, like I'm saying, this gentleman who was an old farmer, thank God he allowed his wife to call and then get him in. And then, again, we did save his life. The words that I use today are the epiglottitis, which was bacterial, and then tracheostomy. And just as kind of finishing up that story, that tracheostomy tube that we did put in for his breathing, it was removed. There's a process that we go through. As the infection goes away, the swelling goes down, he's breathing better, that tracheostomy tube does come out. So it's not a permanent fixture, but indeed it is a life-saving fixture. And, you know, with regard to the airway, you know, we have some disease entities, and we kind of break them into half, if you will. We have the supraglottitis or glottitis. Supraglottitis is where we talk about tissues above the vocal cords. When we talk about glottitis, it usually is the voice box and below. And the one disease that we normally talk about in children is croup. Croup is a disease of the voice box and below the voice box. It's not the epiglottitis, which is above the voice box. You know, again, with airway problems, can be the epiglottitis or the croup. They both need to be managed with airway management, very specific care, but they are resolvable. But they can be very dangerous and indeed actually cause death. But indeed, once we get the patient in, we should be able to save their lives. And that's kind of wrapping airway management up here, Mark. You know, with the tracheostomy, you know, with the epiglottitis, again, treatment is everything here, and it is life-saving and life-changing. So I think we put the cap on that pretty well, Mark.
Well, I definitely think so, and, you know, a lot of load of comments coming in saying, Doc, thanks for giving us the advice each and every week. We really appreciate it. And, boy, I'll tell you, the consistency of this show, and I've told you that before, is just picking up steam. These guys really enjoy it. It's a very unique show, and I'm just so blessed to produce this and be a part of it with you each and every Saturday. As we wind this thing down, let everybody know how they can get a hold of you, where your nice business is there in Pittsburgh, if they're in the Pittsburgh area, where they can stop in and see the girls and the front desk and everything, and then check in to see you.
Well, that's great. They're in the Pittsburgh area, Mark. Hopefully they're not sick. They don't need to see a doctor if they're in the Pittsburgh area vacationing. But, yeah, they can get a hold of me at gjrmd308@outlook.com. Usually, we have someone on the email line. They're checking the emails constantly. And, indeed, if someone is having a problem that we can help, we'll be glad to attend and give you the best advice, best treatment we can if, indeed, you were in the Pittsburgh area and you needed help. So, indeed, Mark, I want to thank Fancini Media. Thanks for the opportunity. I thank the listeners very much for listening and looking forward to, you know, next week's show where we're going to talk about implantable hearing aids to improve the quality of hearing people that have lost their hearing overall.
Yeah, I can't wait for that. And the following week, guys, the listeners, mark it down. July 30th, we go an hour. So that's going to be really great, in-depth, cover these things much more clear and precise with you guys. And we really appreciate you getting up early today and chiming in. We'll be back regularly scheduled next week, 11 o'clock Pittsburgh time, 8 o'clock on the West Coast. For Dr. Greg Roscoe in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, yours truly, Mark Mancini, live in Los Angeles. Have a blessed one. Catch the archive version on blogtalkradio.com/Mancini Sports. We'll talk to you next week.
Thank you very much.